Welcome to a brand new episode of the Internet's Most Hated Mafia-Themed Geek Podcast, the Lone Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, once again, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. I have an idea, folks, and I know what I said last week in regards to what I was going to do, but I have an idea. Please bear with me. And that idea, it came to me because over the past few days, I came to realization that, well, We've grown over the past 4 years, 4.5 years, and where our show gets put out through like Apple Podcasts and Spotify and et cetera, they only go back so far. And yes, I could increase that number, but it's a pain in the ass for everybody. So I decided, why not give all of you, due to the fact that their spring show has been canceled, much to the sadness to everyone, to kind of give you a retrospective of what we provided to all of you out there over the years in regards to the spring and winter shows that were in the Hagerstown area and the Chambersburg area of Four State Comic Con. So, what we're going to do starting this week, is give you some of those classic interviews, some of those stuff that was included in live episodes, and so forth and so on. Even our earlier panels that we've done throughout the years, for probably the first 2 years. So starting with this episode, because this past spring, the spring Four State Comic Con was going to have two voice actors. So why not start off our retrospective with two voice actors that they had in the past. Those two voice actors are Michelle Knotts, who voices Jesse in the Pokemon series. I don't know if she's currently voicing Jesse in the current iteration of Pokemon, but she has voiced Jesse from Team Rocket in the past, and the other one is Samantha Newark, who voiced Gem in Gem and the Holograms, the classic 80s cartoon show. So first up will be the Michelle Knotts interview. Again, Michelle Knotts voiced Jesse from Team Rocket. Jesse's partner in crime in the show was James. So here is Michelle Knotts' interview. This interview stems from 2016. December 19th was the initial posting of this interview. So I believe WinterCon was sometime in late November, early December of that year. So again, let me step back. Here is that Michelle Knotts' interview.
Hello, folks. We're back at the Winter Pop Culture and Comic Wonderland in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. I'm here with the one and only Michelle Knotts, and who's more well known for her character Jessie in the recent inclinations of Pokemon. Right. Can you give us say a few words?
Hello, hi. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me on your podcast. It's a pleasure to talk to you guys.
I know at least on your. I don't really put much stock in IMDb, but how'd you become a voice actress to start out? It said something about winning a BAF contest?
Oh, right, yeah. In 2003, the Big Apple Anime Fest, which they haven't run it in a few years now, it was at the Marriott in Times Square in New York, and they were having a contest. They called it Anime Idol, kind of like, you know, like American Idol kind of thing. So we had to prepare a monologue, and then we had to match, do dubbing, like match to flap and stuff like that, and then they had like some other little contest things, and I won my first role as Hajime Yagi in The World of Narrowway. So it was a short little 12 episode series that was done by Central Park Media. They're not around anymore either, but Yeah, so that's kind of how I got my start into it. I was a theater major, and I studied radio and television broadcasting. I was working at MSNBC, but, like, I hate news, and I hated working there. So I was looking for something different. And theater can be tough, you know, especially on Broadway and everything. The competition is fierce. So I decided to pursue voiceover, and I got a vocal coach, and I made a demo, and I mailed it out everywhere, and now I'm here today.
Did you see... being Pokemon, did the folks who put that out approach you, or did you go for a general audition?
I started voicing Jesse at season 9. So what happened was they were changing where they were going to record it, because it was originally at 4Kids, and then they changed it to Taj Productions. That's all, like, legal stuff that I don't know anything about. they were having auditions to recast the show, so I auditioned for, like, all the ladies, you know, all the ladies came in, auditioned for all the ladies, and I got Jesse. So I started at season 9, and now we're on season 20, so I'll be doing this for almost 12 years.
It's because I've seen some of the folks who have been listening for a while know that I watched the documentary Know That Voice. Is Jesse considered a legacy character because you took it over from someone else? If so, thoughts on some voicing what can be considered a legacy character?
Yeah, it happens a lot. A lot of voice matching is usually done in the voiceover world. Because, you know, like for, what is it, the Clone Wars, like, they're not going to get Ewan McGregor to play Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, they get James Arnold Taylor, who sounds very similar to him. So it's the same with, like, Han Solo or Luke Skywalker. You know, it's tough to get Harrison Ford or Mark Hamill or, you know, Carrie Fisher for Princess Leia. So they have voice matching for that. The same thing happened with, like, Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball Z, One Piece. A lot of times they'll switch studios due to whatever issues they're having with the current studio that they're working with. And, you know, these things kind of happen. So, I tried to work my butt off and sound to close as Rachel as I could. The original voice was Rachel Lillis. So I tried as hard as I could.
I know that... there are toys of Jesse out there, some floating around. I know from way back listening to podcasts myself, the person, the voice actor who voiced Lionel, once told in an interview that seeing himself as that character and voicing,
yeah,
he had a blast going to toy stores and, you know, voicing that character. Oh, in the Lionel voice, oh, you want to buy that character. Have you done that yourself, pranking people?
Yeah, they're mostly for the we call them the creatures, mostly for the Pokemon. So the plushies that they have, so if there's, like, a Piplup out there or a Prinplup or something, like, it's me. So, yeah, going into the store, I actually have one at home, which is funny. So it's more so the creatures than, like, the human characters. So, they talk more like the plushies. People want, like, the plushies more. So, yeah, it's cool. It's awesome.
And also, according to IMDb, you voice a lot of video game characters, aside from the Squirtles and so forth. One of the things I've been hearing a little bit and through the pipeline, I didn't get to ask Phil Lamar that much when I saw him briefly a few months ago. Do you know anything about the voice actor Guild Strike in regards to the video game aspect of things?
Right, yeah.
You don't have to, for whatever I'm going to say this, for whatever legalities there are out there, just if you want to gloss over them, that's fine. You know, just kind of mention, because that it doesn't, I haven't heard that much word about it. Just if you like, just go into it in reference to why there was threats of a strike and so forth and so on in regards to that.
Right. Oh, they actually are striking. Yeah.
It went to a strike. I know.
Yeah.
He said that they were going to renegotiate, but...
I think they're still trying to work. If you Google it, yeah, it's an interesting read. You should really look it up. Like, just Google it, and they are actually striking out. I think they interviewed, actually, Phil Lamar. I remember seeing him on a video on how... I can't remember which news article it was or which news company it was, but I know they interviewed Crispin Freeman and Phil Lamar and a few other people I can't remember. But, yeah, there's a lot of mixed feelings about it. A lot of people are saying, like, oh, well, you get paid, like, you know, $200 an hour, you should be fine. But people don't realize that when you work on a video game, you work on that video game, and then that's it. You're done. Then you have to audition for the next video game. Like, this isn't like, you know, I guess it's the same with film, but even though it pays, like, a lot more. Like, you work on a movie, so the movie's, like, 2 hours. So you're filming for a year, maybe 2 years, and then that film stops, and then you have to work on the next film. So, like, video games are kind of the same. Like, we voice the video game, and you're either paid hourly or, like, a buyout for it, depending on, you know, what they negotiate in the contracts. And, you know, then that's it. Then you have to audition for the next game that comes out, you know. So, like, a lot of people don't understand that it's like, you know, we're not making, like, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a month per video game or anything. Like, we're constantly, you know, auditioning and working. And because auditions, you don't get paid for anything. Like, you don't get paid for auditions at all. So, voice actors don't get residuals.
They don't. Think with a lot of the cartoons and out there, they...
Video games specifically. I'm sorry.
I was about to say, with TV shows, I don't know about Pokemon, but TV shows like Simpsons and, I guess, stuff like that. And movies and TV, you get residuals, but with video games, that's what was kind of explained to me. With video games, you don't really get the residuals.
Right.
As you do with TV and movies and so forth and so on.
Yeah, that's a different. Yeah, they're all different mediums. Like, whether you're doing, like, commercials, and it's even different. Like, commercials for radio, commercials for TV, animation, video. Like, they're all in their each different sections. It's hard to explain.
Yeah, Billy West said that when he does his infamous M&M commercial, they do exist. M&M, Mars has to come up to him and say, "Listen, we're going to reissue that commercial. You were in it. We have to pay you. We have to give you the residuals. We have to redo the contract with you." So there's difference with that. So for the folks at home, Michelle is nodding here, but it's just me explaining it to you guys at home, what a little bit of the legalities. Yeah, we're glossing over it, but still there's that aspect in regards to it.
Yeah, there's a lot more detail that goes into each separate contract, each individual commercial or animation or video game. This particular strike is video game specific. Like, it doesn't have to do with animation or commercials or movies or anything like that. It's just video game specific. Especially the ones like Call of Duty, like, anything to do with, like, soldiers, and you're like, because there's a lot of screaming, and one of the negotiations that they're trying to work out is the fact that you're screaming and screaming and screaming, "Get down! Shoot him! On the floor!" You know, for hours and hours and hours, and you're not getting a break. So that really puts a lot of vocal strain. I've read, this has never happened to me yet, knock on wood, but, like, people have, like, bled through their throat, throwing up in the booth, you know, because their body can't handle it anymore. Like, you know, you can't keep continuing screaming for hours and hours like that. You need certain breaks, water. You know, you should separate the sessions into multiple days. Not just, okay, so we're going to have an 8-hour session today of you doing nothing but screaming in Call of Duty. It's like, what? You can't do that. So they're trying to have it, you know, split up into separate days, which makes sense to me. It's like, okay, we know you got to get the game done and the deadlines and everything, but you can't, like, put so much strain on a person like that. So, this strike specifically is for video games. So, not, any of the other mediums.
To get extras to help, what Phil kind of said at the when I spoke to him briefly, there was a line behind me, you can't really talk too much.
Oh, okay.
Especially in a larger, obviously, you know, larger cons. It's kind of hard to do something like this. And from what he said, it's doing all that screaming, and part of what I heard, it's with someone like Phil and yourself going from, who have a contract with someone, a company like Pokemon or a show like Pokemon or Venture Time or you name it, the countless TV shows that are out there, this is your steady job.
Right.
And doing all that screaming, you still, there's no medical or where you might get medical with a steady work environment like Pokemon or that sort of thing. So they need that extra fundage. So it, I'm glad to know more. Thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like, Google it. It's a really interesting read, and you could find more details about it than, you know, what I can give you right now.
For further details, use your advanced Google Ninja skills or whatever you want. I know this might not be a direct. It's going to be more so your opinion. What are your thoughts about, like, more Asian animation versus the American style?
Oh, okay. So I think
what I'm asking is because obviously you're watching the show as you're recording your lines. I think in some cases, right?
Oh, are you talking like more dubbing versus prelay, or
why not both?
Okay. Okay, so dubbing is you're taking a show from a foreign language and replacing it with your language. So generally with those, we record separately, like we're each individual in the booth by ourselves, and you're constantly looking at the monitor and looking at a script, because in your headphones you hear a series of beeps. There's three beeps. It goes beep, 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 and then on the, we call it the fourth phantom beep, you start speaking. And that's what the time coder does, is puts in the time in and out that computers, yay! So you can put it into Pro Tools, it's nice and easy, and we start talking. So they can like stretch it or shrink the line in order to make it fit inside the flap. We're very meticulous in the United States, which is funny, about lip flap, because if you watch a lot of anime, a lot of times they don't really care about the lip flap, and they'll go off and the mouth will still be moving or not moving. But with prelay, for something like Futurama, The Simpsons, things like that, they record the voices first, animate afterwards. So sometimes they could be in like a group setting. Some, I think maybe the Venture Brothers recorded together as well, like in a big room, as compared to like dubbing, where you usually record separately. Sometimes they'll do prelay separate. It depends. It depends upon like what the producer and director want to do, what they're more comfortable with, what they're used to working with. So yeah, but generally, yeah. So prelay, if you know, prelay is animated after, record the voices first. Dubbing is, it's already animated and we have to record the voices afterwards. So with Japanese anime, I think it's geared a lot more towards teenagers and adults, where you could have themes more like The Walking Dead, where, you know, is more for like an adult show. And a lot of American cartoons, which there is like a good amount of violence in, like Batman or Superman or something, I think it's geared more towards younger audiences, because like anime can also deal with relationships, which in, I think in American animation, they don't like dive into as much as they do in anime. So I think it's there's different restrictions.
The best way to kind of describe it would say American animation is more Victorian in theme, meaning that it's kind of held back, and where in some of the Asian or European markets, it's anything goes. Let's do it. If we need to run up over a person with magma, let's run over. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, they, here in America, well, not so much with like the cable channels, but with the local channels, you got like NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox. There's a thing called standards and practices.
The censorship is more restrict.
Right. Like for the local channels, not so much like the cable channels like Cartoon Network. The local channels have standards and practices where they're a lot more strict on censoring things. Whereas in like other countries, you know, they're a little more easygoing, you know, about that kind of thing.
Yeah, I heard at one point through several people who were talking about importing Japanese animation, including shows like Pokemon, where it's once it's imported over to the United States, half, up to maybe half or more, is cut out due to our censorship instead of European. So
yeah, that's why I think they changed Pokemon a lot in Japan as well, to try and meet more of the standards of practices here, so it can sell better, not so much heavily edited. Like, you know, no guns, no nudity, no anything like that, you know. So so it's easier. They do have to edit out, I know, like, the beginning and ending of the songs a little bit. I know they go longer in Japan, but that's because of the commercial time, too. There's a lot more commercials in the United States than there are. We like our commercials. So so they have to try and fit also the commercial time into the show. So, which usually isn't, it's not like 5 minutes long. It's usually maybe like a couple, like a minute or like, but like that much minute, you have to try and figure out where to take it out, because like even like 60 seconds of something could seem like a lifetime when you're editing it. So yeah,
I remember watching Yu-Gi-Oh way back in the day, coming back from a commercial, and it's like, okay, something happened, they cut something out, they cut something out,
yeah,
because something happened between A and B. Now Yugi's down 500 life points. What the hell happened? So but to kind of go back to Pokemon a little bit, recently I saw that it was kind of leaked. The first episode of Sun and Moon was leaked here in the United States.
Oh.
Will you be a, don't, you don't have to go into details, just, will you be a part of the new, dubbing the new series if it comes to the United States?
Oh, well, I can say, like, it's aired in the UK, and it's actually going to air tomorrow. So the first two episodes of Sun and Moon will be tomorrow. I'm not exactly sure what time. You can Google it. It's going to be on Disney XD. We're not on Cartoon Network anymore, so it's going to be on Disney XD tomorrow, December 5th. I'm not exactly sure what time, but you can you know, go to the Disney XD website.
And the movie.
Oh, and the movie. Which movie is it? The Volcanion movie. And they're going to show, sorry. And they're going to show the Volcanion movie tomorrow. So, yeah, I can say that I'm in it, because it aired in the UK, which is actually, so it's still English, because the UK, they speak English. So my name is in there. It's in the credits, so I can say, like, yeah. So yeah, we started that up, and yeah, we'll be moving forward.
I know this is, I'm going to ask this for the fans, because at one point I saw there was a meme about Jesse and James saying they were the both people loved each other the most, but they somehow friend zoned each other at the same exact time. Being part of the program for so long, what are your comments of Jesse and James?
It's funny, because, like, I don't know, she treats him really bad. I mean, even though, like, I voice her, it's funny, I'm like, wow, she's really mean to him sometimes. But but they're funny, like, I
but it seems like they both like each other,
yeah.
But at the same time, there's that dynamic that they somehow friend-zoned each other. You know?
I feel like they're in the friend zone. They're more like a brotherly sister type kind of love hate kind of thing. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's animated in Japan and stuff. I don't know where the writers are going to take it. I don't know where they're going to go in the future from here. Like, none of us know that. Like, they don't tell us anything.
but the thing is, from what I hear in the Japanese original, at least in the manga version, they got married, they had children, and but that's Japanese here in the States, and I guess there's that whole standard. You can't really have that. That's that dynamic. But I had to at least ask. What about some of the other animes even though you're still working with Pokemon, what other, and you mentioned one prior, are there other animes you've done in the past?
Yeah, I can announce, I just posted this on Facebook, I'm Karina in the One Piece film Gold movie, which is going to be in theaters January 10th to the 17th. You have to Google that too, because it's only in select theaters, it's not in like all movie theaters, you know. I think they did that with the Dragon Ball Z movie too. It was only in like select theaters for a certain amount of time. So that's exciting. That's going to be coming out. I was Ogiyoe Chika in Genshiken, Koyuki Asagiri in Kuchibiki Unbalanced, balanced. Who am I? Cho and Shiryu in Ikitosen, Tomoe and Airi in Queen's Blade. Video games, I was Elisa Boskanovich in Street Fighter Cross Tekken. Lilia Sotome in The Guided Fate Paradox by NIS America. And lots of other things. You can Google me. I'm at michellenotz.com. I'm on Facebook, Twitter. It's just Michelle Knotts. I think I'm like the only Michelle Knotts out there. I don't know.
According to IMDb, yeah, you are. Oh, as far
cool.
as I'm...
Okay, cool. Nice. So, yeah, you could like... you know, just Google my name, and I update the website frequently, so I got, I list all the conventions that I'm going to be at, the new things that I'm working on, so yeah, check it out.
Do you have any favorite conventions to go to, or anything like that, or want to talk about conventions?
I love all the conventions I go to. I'd like to do more West Coast, because I've been like from Maine to Florida, you know, all the way. I've done all like East Coast conventions, so I'd like to. I did go to San Japan in Texas in September. That was September. That was a lot of fun. So I'd love to branch out more to like the West Coast conventions, which would be really cool. So yeah, everybody like kind of knows me on the East Coast. So I'm like, I need to get out there more. So I'd love to do more cons out there, like California, better weather.
Well, let's see. Is there anything else I wanted to ask? No? That seems to be about it. I think we talked about voicing Jesse a lot, a little bit. I guess I could ask one little extra question about Jesse. Have you put your little spin on that character after replacing the role from the previous?
I try to keep, well, above all, we have to listen to our director. You know, whatever the director wants, we have to do. So we read the lines, and if the director wants to change it up a little bit, make it a little more serious, a little more goofy. Also, it depends on, like, the animation. See, like, Prelay, you have a lot more freedom than dubbing. Like, dubbing, you have to, you know, watch the character, what are they doing, their facial expressions, and you have to match that. But, like, Prelay, you have a lot more freedom because, like, they animate afterwards. So it's like, if you want to read a line, like, really crazy and zany or something like that, then they can animate to it. So Prelay, you have a little more freedom, and dubbing, you kind of have to do what's on the screen. So you work closely with your director on how you want, you know, the character to be portrayed, but at the same time, you have to see what's going on in the animation first. So that's why we watch it first. We usually watch it first, and we'll watch it in Japanese, and then go back and record it in English. So yeah.
One last thing. Any word for the folks at home or listening that want to break into the voice acting business? Any advice or?
Yeah, the most important word that they say in voice acting is acting. So so it's good to like do community theater, do like theater at your school, if you're like high school or college, get involved with like the theater programs, or like even like the radio, like all schools have radio stations now, and everything is all digital. So like learn how to do that. I would say a lot of people have home studios, learn how to edit, like learn computer programming, not like IT computer programming, but like editing software.
Like Audacity, right. Or just the audio GarageBand, right. so forth.
Yeah, learn how to use the editing software, because a lot of times people will say, oh, do you have a home studio? Can you record this audition at home? So you don't have to do a lot of traveling, which helps. So I would say, yeah, definitely in school, take those kind of classes. Like learn editing, learn acting. And that'll help you out for like the beginners in high school or college to start out. Yeah.
Again, thank you. I have your business cards from Chris and all that. I'll let you know once the episode's posted.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed Michelle's interview that we did way back in 2016. And yes, I was wrong. I said Chambersburg area at the start of the intro. It turned out to be Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. That's where Forest State Comic Con kind of started out, and they did their winter show instead of a fall show, and they called it Winter Wonderland. So next up is the Samantha Newark interview. I hope you enjoy it. Again, Samantha Newark is the voice of Jem, and I think the other character she voiced was Jessica. If my memory serves of the show, Jessica kind of transformed into Jem for the show, so... Let me step back and let you all in on the interview and let you hear the interview. So here we go.
Hello, folks. This is Reverend Godfather. I'm still at the Winter Pop Culture and Comic Wonderland in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. I'm here with the very lovely Samantha Newark, who most of you, if you are old enough, remember her voicing the lovely Jem from Jem and the Holograms, and I think it was she had an alter ego as well, right?
Yes, the alter ego was Jerrica Benton.
I'm going to start it out simple. What's it like being a voice actress, and how did you get started in being a voice actress?
It's a wonderful, wonderful gig, and finally all the celebrities figured that out. So, I mean, a lot of the animated films you see now, it's huge, huge star names, but it's such a great... I started off singing. I'm still a singer-songwriter, so it was kind of a medium that was very comparable in a way, so I took to it like a fish to water, and just loved it.
I was going to ask you, in reference to singing, you just said you sung in the past. Prior to the role of Jem, how long were you singing?
I didn't do the singing for Jem. The music was all done in New York.
Oh, I was going to ask you if you were sung for Jem.
Yeah, it was a big secret at the time. They did a lot of that in the 80s, but all the singing voices were cast in New York before they hired the voice actors. So basically they were matching our speaking voices to the singing voices, and Britta Phillips is a singing voice, and she's also a voice actor, and I'm the speaking voice, but I'm also a singer-songwriter, so...
So you two kind of collaborated on some of the stuff, or not?
Nobody actually had the opportunity to meet during the run of the show. It's only been since the comic book conventions that we've all kind of started to reunite over the years, so...
How do you view, or because Jem's been around for many, many years, do you think that, and now it's still on Netflix, do you think Jem has the aspect of a, I don't mean this in a bad way, a positive female role model for girls out there?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't see a whole lot out there for young girls. I know there was a big, you know, a lot of fans were mad about the live action film that came out last year, but at the end of the day, it's a female-driven film with a positive message for young girls and for kids, and you know, I'm all for that. And there are so many universes of Jem. There's Robot Chicken Jem. There's the comic book Jem. There's the original cartoon. There's the film. There's even Jizz for the adult Jem people that know what I'm talking about.
I'm oddly horrified to know and oddly curious of kids at home that might be listening to this. It's a no.
Going to the dark side.
It seemed like Jem was part of that early 80s, mid 80s trend of music video type cartoons. Yeah. With I think Jem was a during the week show versus a Saturday morning show.
I don't really remember, to be honest with you.
I had to look it up myself.
Yeah, but it was the dawning of MTV, pretty much. I mean, MTV came a little before Jem, but it was groundbreaking in the sense that they had like real music videos in the middle of the cartoon, you know, with the credit of like, you know, Twilight in Paris by Jem and the Holograms, and it was great. And they incorporated it into each episode.
Because you see, with that Jem, not the cartoon at all, because again I had to look it up, because I remember seeing these shows as kids. You had Vid Kids, you had Kid Video, which was on both were Saturday morning, that, you know, somehow incorporated a video or a parody or a cover of a song where Jem had a rich 2-minute little snippet or a minute long snippet from both aspects of it. Also, you are not only Jem, you are also part of the Transformers. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I play Ariel. Actually, I did three different characters. I was Ariel, who transforms into Alita 1. Alita 1 was actually played by Maureen Aragon, who's the voice of Synergy in Jem. And RC is played by Sue Blue, who played Stormer in Jem. So I play a pink robot Ariel. And I also play a high school girl named Elise Presser, who's building a robot. I did like two episodes of that, and then I did a Zamagin Empress. So it's pretty awesome to be a part of the Transformers. Transformers brand as well as the GEM brand, because they're, you know, they're so iconic. They just don't make the cartoons like they used to, you know.
Being that I said, being part of two iconic cartoons, one that obviously came from the Asian market, and I think GEM was from the American market. What's it like being part of two, in essence, iconic, classic cartoons that are out there?
I mean, you don't think about that when you're doing the work. You know, you're just hoping to do the best work that you possibly can. I don't know. I don't think any of us really knew that we'd be here still talking about this work that we did. But it's fantastic. It's really a treasure. It's an honor to be a part of brands that have stood the test of time, because they are really special to so many people. So
I know you briefly.
I'm gonna take off my coat.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm burning up.
It's folks at home. It's not what you think. Again, Samantha is a very lovely woman, and I'm not going to hold that against. She has aged very. I haven't seen young pictures of her, so I'm going to say she's aged very well.
People still say I look pretty much the same, and I sound the same, which is nice.
I gotta sit because my knees are going out.
Yeah.
I'm not as young as I was either. I think I know you touched on the live-action GEM movie. I think it wasn't the fact, from what I heard, it wasn't the fact that some of the things were changed. It was that the folks behind the scenes, mostly the producers and probably the studio, contacted a lot of the fans, the old-school fans, to be a part of the movie, and where they were remembering the nostalgia of the show that you were part with, and where the movie went left instead of mirroring, you know, everybody was thinking it was going to be part of, like, the cartoon or similar to it.
People wanted to audition for the role of Jem, for the role of Jerrica. So, I mean, I do understand. I get it. I just, I guess I saw it in more of a business paradigm, because I just thought, this is a chance for the GEM brand to come out to a whole new generation of kids who will then investigate the source material and fall in love with the cartoon. So, you know, in my business, we're so used to not, we can't get attached to anything, because you end up in a mental institution if you got attached to what you wanted things to look like and got attached to outcomes. So I guess I was coming more from that place. You know, but it was just lovely to be invited to be a part of it, and, you know, maybe we'll get a sequel, maybe we won't, but yeah, it would have been nice if they'd stuck more closely to the original. And
are you surprised that GEM has lasted this long, or that it has held up this long?
Yeah, I mean, who knew? But, you know, looking back, it's got so much heart, and it's obviously it's really campy and over the top, and it screams 80s in every way, but it's got a genuine real heart to it. And I remember when I auditioned for it, they told me, you know, we want very real reads. We want the kids to feel like you're their friends and they can look up to you. So they didn't want us real cartoony. And I think that, you know, they also weren't afraid to jump into some pretty dark subject matter, because, I mean, GEM opens with a funeral, so they deal with the death of a parent, and they deal with drug addiction and all kinds of pretty intense stuff in a cartoon, and they did it really, really well.
Granted, it was campy, and you went from there. What other work after that have you done prior, after?
Oh, gosh. I did everybody has to have a cheesy B-horror movie in their arsenal, so I was in a horror movie, actually, when I was working on GEM, and I did a ton of commercials, I've been a musician I've been singing since I was a small kid, so I have a ton of my music in film and TV, and I really started to focus on that when the celebrities were starting to really, you know, I was auditioning against Alicia Silverstone and Drew Barrymore, and, you know, they were going with names, so I really kind of was at a turning point where I wanted to focus more on my songwriting and my music. And
you're talking in reference to animation voice acting?
Yeah.
Even though I didn't get a chance to speak about that particular topic with Michelle, I'll ask you, I know there has been some resentment with a lot of the mainstream voice actors. I'm not going to mention names. The ones that have the vocal variety to do the variant of voices. There seems to be a little bit of disdain because a lot of studios are going with the Drew Barrymores, the Alicia Silverstones, the Tom Cruises. What are your thoughts in reference to that?
Well, you know, I mean, it's just the business. It's show business, and you got to be in it for the long haul, and you got to just love what you do and adapt to the new landscape. So that's what I did, and I've always loved music. It's been my passion forever. So I was like, oh, okay. So I guess I'm getting pushed into like fronting a million bands and touring with a Pink Floyd tribute band and writing music. And so, you know.
Before we move to music, because I wouldn't mind touching on that for a little bit, and to get away from, I know you'd be asking a whole mess of gem questions this past weekend, but, oh, sorry. How would you feel about if Gem actually was remade again as a cartoon?
It's okay. It would be fantastic. And I've thought, you know, how wonderful if Netflix developed something maybe based more on the original and maybe sort of taking it into the 21st century like the comic books have would be really fun. And I know a lot of us voice actors are still around. You know, I'm actually really good friends with the voice of Pizzazz, Patricia. We both live in Nashville. So, you know, who knows what Hasbro has up its sleeve, but it would be really fun to see it come back because it's such a sweet property, and it means so much to the original generation, but it's got such a good message for kids. You know?
Moving to, what kind of, you said you're singing now, what kind of or type of music are you singing?
Well, I've been a session singer in L.A. for a million years, so I've sung everything.
Don't mean to pause you, but for the sake of the listeners, what is a session singer?
It's where you get hired to sing jingles and songs for other songwriters that are getting pitched to other artists and songs for songwriters that are being pitched to film and TV, so I've done a ton of that. And it's like, you know, can you sound like a 16-year-old girl, Avril Lavigne, Nova Brado, for this, you know, soundtrack or whatever. So I've done lots of stuff like that, so I've sung pretty much everything. But my own artist vibe, I'm moving into more of a dance music realm, which I love. And so I've sung pop, basically, with dance electronica elements. Got a new album coming out in February called Hologram, which is kind of my love letter to the fans that are.
I was going to ask you what's coming out, but you said you were a singer since 13. I was going to ask you if being a part of Gem and the Hargrimes led to you to become a singer.
No, actually, I did my first professional show in South Africa when I was 7, and made a record when I was 8 and toured all over Africa when I was a little kid and sang for the Prime Minister. And so I've been performing since I got before. My dad says before I cut my second teeth. But no, Gem was just such an awesome thing. Kind of got to live out my rock star fantasies because it was like, hey, thanks for coming to our concert. And we're Gem and the Holograms. Yay! And, you know, it was awesome to just step into those.
Into that role of a high-end pop singer without actually stepping in.
Exactly. And, you know, I've sung materials similar to what Britta had to do with Gem, like belting chest voice super, super high, and it's not the funnest way to sing. So, my hat's off to her. I didn't actually have to do that, which was great, and I got to focus on this whole other realm of voice work, which was just an epic, amazing time. Working with the incredible voice actors, we recorded ensemble together, which was very, very fun.
What advice do you have to the up-and-coming singer and voice actor or actress?
I just say really learn your craft. You know, go take classes. There are lots of workshops for voice actors where you can learn about your craft. You can also get a reel done. And, you know, and also what you guys have that I didn't have back in the day is YouTube and the internet, because anything that you want to really wrap your brain around, there are tutorials and there are people who have put it out there. You can have mentors online, basically, and that's an incredible gift. So I would highly recommend taking advantage of that, because otherwise, you know, you're just kind of plodding along, doing the best you can.
Do you have any message for a lot of the young, I don't want to say girls, young ladies out there that want to step into the role? I know what I asked was a general, but a little kind of a message to the young ladies out there that might be guessing themselves.
You don't have to take off your clothes to be successful. And, you know, just really find what makes you unique and embrace that. Because I think at the end of the day, when we're all trying to, like, be like everybody else, you lose your specialness. And I think the people that rise in the business are the ones that we perceive as somehow special. But I think they're just being their unique, beautiful selves, and they're sharing the unique talent. So nurture that, and don't let anybody push you around, and be kind and be on time and be your word and go kick some butt.
Well, even though this is going to be a short episode, is there anything else you'd like to say to everybody out there?
Thank you, all of you that already follow me on my social media, and I'm easy to find. If you don't, it's SamanthaNewark.com, and I hope you'll say hi. I admin my pages when I'm able to, and I like corresponding with the fans. So
I'll let you thank you for the interview, Samantha. I'll contact you through your social media. I'll let you know when the episode is posted. Thank you, guys.
Again, folks, that was Samantha Newark. I hope you enjoyed her interview. That interview was taken from the Winter Show back in 2016. Yep, that's right. Going on 4 years ago, December 2016. I hope you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed this episode, and we'll be enjoying, like I said, we'll be putting out some more retrospectives out there. But if you wish to contact us in any way, shape, or form, you could always email us, as always. Our email is longcoatmafia@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment in the pinned post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/ The Longcoat Mafia Podcast. And plus, we do have a Twitter page, or I should say a Twitter account. You can always leave us a direct message that way. Our Twitter account is at Longcoat Mafia. Or you can leave us a direct message at our Instagram account. Our Instagram account is also Longcoat Mafia. So we do recommend that you follow us on either like or follow us on those aspects. We do also have a YouTube page. Our YouTube page is, you're going to have to follow the link, because it's a bunch of capital and lowercase letters and a bunch of numbers. You can always find it by doing a search of for Longcoat Mafia Podcast. It is the first and only channel that comes up. We ask you while there to hit that subscribe button and hit that bell and for everything, because we might be doing some live streaming in regards to the whole aspect of gaming and all that. And plus, that's why we put up a lot of exclusive YouTube videos for YouTube. Sometimes we put some videos up on Facebook that are Facebook exclusive. So we ask you to like our YouTube page and subscribe to our, I should say, subscribe to our YouTube page and like our Facebook page. That way you're able to keep up with what we're doing and so forth and so on. I got to get back into the whole Twitter game. I know it's not really the best place in town, but still. What else? As I stated, we're going to be doing more streaming, game streaming. As I'm recording this in about a half hour or so, the new DLC for Borderlands will be dropping, and maybe starting Monday, we will be firing up our Mixer channel. Our Mixer channel is mixer.com/LCMP, and we'll probably be starting to do that whole thing, stream the whole DLC. I know there's a whole brand new level cap and everything else. So, stick with us. We'll be doing that. We'll let you know either on Twitter and Facebook, and possibly on Instagram as well, when we're going to start streaming in regards to that. We do have a Twitter account. Our Twitter is twitter.tv/ Longcoat Mafia Pod, I think it is. But either way, you could find our links on our main page, our website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And also, speaking of that, it's a great segue. To let you all know, if you wish to listen to our show via a laptop or desktop computer, You can do so by listening to us through either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and it's one of the reasons why we're kind of doing this. Those outlets only go back 90 or so episodes, maybe 100 episodes. That's why we're doing this. Even though we have our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, where you could go back all the way to the beginning and see the original, or I should say, listen to the original broadcasts of all these episodes that we're going to be putting out. And snag those, see how cringeworthy the intros and the music was that we put in the front and the back. So there's that. But if you're listening to us on a mobile device, you can listen to us through either Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and plus where a bunch of other podcasts are found, including the Podbean app, which I think allows you to go back to all the way to the beginning and listening to all our archived episodes. I think that's about it. Stay tuned for next week. I'm not sure what I'm going to be pulling from which particular episodes. So stay tuned and find out. It might be a panel episode. If I do the panel episodes, I might put two together if they're roughly the same theme. So we'll see about that. And again, take care. See you all next week. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, hey, let us know. Email us. Leave us a message on either Facebook, or if the episode is posted up on YouTube, put a comment down below. And if you like it, hit that like button. So again, take care. I am the Reverend Godfather, and I am out of here.
See you next time on the Longcoat Mafia.